This week on Best in Show, it's a strike minisode. Why are Hollywood's actors and writers on strike? What does it mean for you, me, fall festivals, and award season? And how can we support workers' rights while still talking about the movies that we love? And welcome to Best in Show, a limited podcast series brought to you by The Letterboxd Show. I am Mia Lee Vicino, the West Coast editor here at Letterboxd, and Best in Show is all about awards season and the film industry ecosystem. We interrogate insiders, meet contenders, and mostly do what we always do here at Letterboxd, celebrate cinema. But it's hard to celebrate cinema just at this moment, with much of the industry on strike. So, what does all of this mean for film festivals, for award season, for people's livelihoods, for your Letterboxd reviews of struck projects? I have gathered my Best in Show besties for an update on where things are at right now, and Letterboxd's place in the picture. Please welcome Hollywood veteran and our editorial producer, Brian Formo.
Ah!
And our editor-in-chief, Gemma Gracewood.
Hello, hello.
No scream from Gemma. Okay. So,
I'm screaming on the inside.
First things first, this will not be a long episode because we don't have all the answers, but we want to get at least some of the answers to your most common questions. So we'll be back in 2 weeks with a strike captain for a mailbag episode of Best in Show. Please send your questions in to podcast@letterboxd.com.
I'm already writing mine right now, right now. I've got one. Is it crossing the picket line to go to the movie theater?
Excellent question, Gemma. The short answer, no.
Phew.
Yeah, phew. Unless the WGA and SAG-AFTRA explicitly call for a cinema boycott, you can and should continue to go to the movies and support your local theaters. Same with watching films and TV via streamers. Unless these unions release a statement, you do not need to cancel your streaming subscriptions.
You are also allowed to write Letterboxd reviews of the films you've seen. It is not scabbing to do that, unless of course, you happen to be an actor, in which case, if it's a film that was made under a contract with a struck company, then you are best to hold off on sharing your thoughts on any social media, including on Letterboxd, for the duration of the strike. And that probably goes for writers as well, just to be on the very, very, very safe side. There's a lot of jargon for newcomers to the 100-year-long history of creative workers negotiating contracts with Hollywood. Struck companies, WGA, SAG-AFTRA, AMPTP, residuals, ratification, background actors. I'm trying to think of some more. Understandably, it's a lot. And we actually have a story up on Journal that unpacks a lot of these acronyms for you. So you might want to have that open while you're listening. Speaking of acronyms, remember EEAAO? How can you not, Brian? Only a few short months ago, Everything Everywhere All at Once won 7 Academy Awards. And Sarah Polley took home the writing Oscar for Women Talking, one of the best things to ever happen in the history of movie making. It felt that night with those wins for those particular people, like Hollywood was maybe, you know, changing for the better, like it was a paradigm shift. But insiders knew then that the contracts between writers and actors and Hollywood were going to expire mid-year. But I think everyone felt quite optimistic. 5 months ago on an Oscar high with the pandemic receding and Barbie and Oppenheimer on the horizon, could we have imagined, Brian, that we'd be here, tools down, Hollywood hamstrung?
Well, actually, I put this later in my notes, but this is the perfect place to say that the Oscars actually started as a way to try to get people from not unionizing in the industry.
What? Wait, what?
Yeah.
Hang on. We don't want you to unionize, so we'll give you some little gold trophies? What?
Yeah, the idea was, so like IATSE was already a thing, and that's actually the oldest union for stage workers. It actually came from Broadway, but it started with the belief that if you gave people trophies, they would think of themselves more as artists and laborers, because in the early 20s, there was a huge labor movements going on, and the studio system was very nervous about creating unionization. So like they instead said, here's the Oscars, but it didn't stop people from unionizing. So they got both.
We're hip to your game. Just because you give me a medal doesn't mean I can't ask for better pay, right?
Yeah. So the Oscars maybe aren't the they aren't the ideal way to temperature gauge how union things might be going, just from their origin story is trying to keep unions
out altogether.
But the Oscars this year, yes, it was a lovely night. Was March 12th, something that none of us were thinking of because most of us didn't know what it was outside of venture capital investors in the tech sector. But ChatGPT and its parent company, OpenAI, they released ChatGPT-4 on March 14th. So just 48 hours after the Oscars. And so, yes, we all knew that this that the writer's strike would be coming May 1st. Me and I have a lot of friends who are screenwriters, and I think...
Not to brag.
I have no friends who are screenwriters, apparently. None whatsoever.
And so the way that I was hearing about is like, you know, like everyone's taking these meetings, they're trying to get the final polish on the script because they can't sell it after a certain point. Everyone's trying to get all their I's dotted and their T's crossed. So at the 11th hour, it became apparent that AI was going to be a new issue within these negotiations, not just pay, not just access. There were a lot of grievances, but ChatGPT was coming fast. And in April, you have influential thinkers around the world saying that we should pause AI research for months, like right where it is now, but tech marched on. And then you had the creators of ChatGPT in a U.S. congressional hearing in mid-May after the writers are already on strike saying, please regulate us. And it's basically been said back, we don't understand this like you do. Can you regulate yourselves? Because we don't understand this. No one really understands what might happen with AI except for the way that it could be used. We aren't really trusting those in charge to use it to better our work and pay.
I can quickly jump in and tell you about the threat from AI. I got AI to write an intro, an alt intro for this episode for Mia to read. And it goes like this. From delayed releases to changes in the creative process, we'll explore the potential impacts of the strikes and what it could mean for audiences. So sit back, grab some popcorn and join us as we dive into the fascinating world of film industry labor negotiations.
The fascinating world. That'll be a blockbuster. Yeah.
So I ask you, like, you know, Your Honor, Exhibit A, it's not good. It's not good. It's competent. It's not good.
No. And there are more threats than this unchecked advancement of AI. One of the most damning statistics I read is how out of the whopping 160,000 SAG-AFTRA members, 86% of them do not make the $26,470 a year from acting that they need to in order to qualify for health insurance. And what's more, 92% earn less than $80,000 a year. So $80,000 might sound like a lot, but keep in mind that actors generally have to live in Los Angeles or New York for work, two cities with incredibly high costs of living. For example, according to the California Department of Housing and Community Development, a $70,000 yearly salary is considered low income for LA.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, we tend to associate the job of actor with wealthy movie stars, but the reality is that the vast majority are middle class and background actors who are scraping by on a couple of gigs a year while also juggling various side hustles.
Well, actually, and along with this, I was just going to jump in here since you tossed out LA living statistics. A number of hotel workers in LA are also on strike, particularly in the Beverly Hills area, because commuting to work there with the wages that they receive is not sustainable to even do their work. So like there's a lot of labor discussions going around all around the city and its livability.
Mm, and this is very, we have to say from the outset, me with my New Zealand accent, that this is very American centric. And you could also argue that underpinning a lot of this is your country's lack of socialized medicine.
Absolutely.
So, you know, it becomes more important than ever when, you know, I could be an actor in New Zealand, break my leg, go to hospital, walk out healed, not have to pay a cent.
Oh God, I wish that was me.
Right?
I'd be breaking my leg all the time.
Mia, you're so young.
That is a beautiful theatrical inside joke. I love it so much. go break a leg. Yeah. That's not even, and all of this is not even to mention the low pay for streaming residuals, which is the check you get for a show that you've done continuing to be played and watched. And you can't open Instagram or TikTok at the moment without walking straight into a video of a TV actor showing their annual residual check they've just received for mere cents, like $1.71. I mean, come on. And on the writer's front, a lot of the current pain has to do with the shift from traditional broadcast television seasons, which are long and provide a full year's work, to much shorter streaming seasons where you might be lucky to get 6 episodes in a season for much lower rates than traditional TV scripts, because streamers, when they started, managed to get away with a bit of a lie about being new media and therefore lower budget. And you know, that might be your only job for a year is like a 6-season series. The writers have been on strike since May, of course. The actors joined just 2 weeks ago. A lot of attention has gone on the strike since then because, you know, actors, stars. But over the course of the almost 100 days of the WGA strike, the conversation has moved from access to writers' rooms and increased pay to the AI question, can scripts be written by trained robots? Well, you know, grab your popcorn and find out.
So what all of these various factors and issues boil down to is this: writers and actors are not being paid nor treated the way that they deserve. The value of creative work has been consistently eroded over many, many years, even though the feeling of connecting to a piece of art is one of the very best things about being human.
Mm. I mean, the conundrum, of course, is that filmmaking is an art and it's a business. It's storytelling. People want to make a living wage for their creative work telling those stories. And companies want to make a profit for their shareholders. And then just as the invention of the camera itself disrupted storytelling, technology continues to disrupt film storytelling. Major moments of union activism tend to align with technological change in every industry. And in ours, in our industry, you can see major contract negotiations happen when technological change comes. So when they started playing films on television in the 60s, when home video came along in the 80s, when streaming arrived in the 2000s. But this right now feels like, I you know, maybe it's because we're in it, but it feels like the most significant and strange time for renegotiating rights. And Brian, why is that?
There's another crazy anecdote I could drop here, but like because the whole origin of Hollywood being a place of why movies studios were here in the first place was taking cameras and moving them out west so that Thomas Edison couldn't sue people file lawsuits quick enough before a movie had finished for using something against his patent. So like this whole industry is comes off of grift in some type of way.
Yeah, and not to mention that white people knew about the West Coast in the first place because of gold. You know, like it's a different kind of gold rush. It's money, 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 right?
Yes, technological advances. I'm just tossing that out there because the invention of the camera. But the last time there was a writer's strike, Netflix was still a DVD mailing service and iTunes had just started to sell digital TV shows. The last time that there was an actor's strike was after the invention of the VHS. So they are kind of aligned at these technological points. Now, all of these contracts have been negotiated since. But those are the last times that there were strikes, 2007 and 1981 for the actors, 2007 for the writers and 1981 for the actors. What is different now is that Hollywood is more beholden than ever to Wall Street and stock market. And a lot of that has to do with Silicon Valley. The reason that Netflix became a massive disruptor wasn't just because it started to make original programs 10 years ago, but Wall Street and venture capitalists, they like to bet on potential results, which highly rewards the tech sector. So Netflix's potential and the reason they received billions and billions of dollars of investments was in growing subscribers and combating the old models. The old models were highly profitable via ads and home video and exclusive windows on cable. But those models had contract protections. That's what these negotiations are about now, is to have new contract protections. Something that we haven't talked about so far is streamers don't have to release numbers like distributors have to in regards to box office, and networks have to do with ratings. And so transparency is a big part of this strike. Creators want access to more numbers to actually see how many people are actually watching their stuff instead of just kind of receiving information and those checks for pennies, like you had mentioned. We see this time and time again with Wall Street, where they become obsessed with tech disruptors and funnel all this money into a single channel without anything to replace it. And you, Gemma, you bring up our lack of socialized medicine in the United States. There's just like a lack of safety nets overall in this country, and that includes within labor. And so just look, especially within the tech sector. So look at the rideshare companies or the delivery apps. They're fighting year after year to keep their drivers not as employees, but as contractors who provide their own car, gas, and insurance. Share prices go up because membership goes up. And that was a similar model that that Wall Street was using to look at the entertainment industry. Now, Netflix's membership stopped going up for the first time in last year, 2022. And the Wall Street honeymoon ended. So like Uber and Lyft putting rideshare employment on the California ballot to try to help their profitability after destroying the taxi industry. Now streaming and studio execs and shareholders are moving their fight against the workers. There's a great, there's a really great opinion piece written by Brian Merchant of the LA Times, who covers the tech industry for the LA Times. And I'm just going to end with a quote, that he had toward the end of that piece. We should put it in the episode notes, so I'll make sure we do that. But Silicon Valley's invasion of Hollywood brought with it science fictional notions of growth for the industry, a penchant for secrecy and unaccountability, and the expectation that it could get away with treating workers like robots or invisible code.
Robots.
The only robot that I'm interested in consuming art from is Gigolo Joe from Spielberg's AI artificial intelligence. I feel like that dude has stuff to say.
And look good while saying it.
Yes, exactly.
Don't look over Gigolo Jane, though.
Okay, that's true. Justice for Gigolo Jane. She should also speak. Those are the two robots we will allow to speak. Gigolo Joe and Jane.
I just find it all so fascinating. And this is, you know, possibly naive, and I don't mind being the naive voice in the room. But, you know, it's all this feels like to me is walls of unknowable numbers, you know, subscribers, audiences. But I'm a person who likes to watch things. And so it's, you know, from the Letterboxd perspective, these are really interesting times because our platform is built on sharing your love of film through personal recommendations and following each other. And I feel like, you know, every time I turn on a streamer, there's a lack of individual curated care to what I'm offered. That it's just a wall of titles and therefore a wall of numbers. And there's only so many people in the world, and there's only so many things we can watch in a day. I feel like kind of like Silicon Valley butting up against storytelling is always going to be a source of tension. And so it's a really fascinating time. And from a best in show perspective, we're staring down the barrel of a fall festival. What we mean by that is, you know, the big Venice, Toronto, New York Film Festival, Telluride, all the big festivals that happen around the Northern Hemisphere fall season. Lots and lots of red carpets, usually a lot of stars. And also an awards season that gears up from around November with no stars potentially, since writers and actors are forbidden under their union strike rules from promoting any struck work. So we've been thinking a lot about, I guess, Letterboxd's role at this moment in time. Obviously, you know, you can tell by listening, we value the creative labor that produces the films and series we love. And this industrial action is important since it really is about drawing a line in the sand around that value, not just in Hollywood, but everywhere. It's about ensuring protections and compensations to account for new technologies we we don't even know that we're going to have maybe next year, since we didn't know at the Oscars that 2 days later ChatGPT was going to be so prevalent. And changing business models. And I guess as an audience-first platform, we're an essential part of the infrastructure of the film business. And that we are word of mouth. You know, we are the voice of the audience. And that's so, so, so important to the arts, and it never won't be. A story is not truly finished until it's met its audience. You can make a movie. What does it mean? You know, it's a tree falling in the forest until somebody has pressed play or bought that ticket.
Example, Puss in Boots, The Last Wish.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Elaborate. Please elaborate.
You know, when Puss in Boots, The Last Wish was first coming out, you know, I feel like the general consensus was just kind of like, oh, a sequel to a spinoff, who cares? And then people actually saw it and realized it was like this feline masterpiece, and it shot up on the Letterboxd top rated list. It cracked the top 250. Everybody was talking about it. It was that
we
word of mouth.
We partied with the directors.
Exactly.
We partied with the directors in Hollywood. We had Puss in Boots biscuits. Mm-hmm. It was a beautiful thing. It really was. I mean, one of the best representations of anxiety in cinema. So, you know, speaking of partying with Oscar-nominated directors in rooms, as I said, the Fall Film Festival season is almost upon us. That's a crucial, crucial platform for the film business. And it's not just about chasing awards. It's also about undistributed new films looking for deals. You know, studios going looking for films looking for distributors. Plus, there's also the fact that many of our members on Letterboxd are also union members or want to be, and so need to follow the rules and are striking. And on top of that, we are a business, so we have business partnerships with struck companies so that we can help you discover new films and we can help films reach their audiences. So we're in a really interesting situation and, you know, obviously mindful that COVID devastated the theatrical industry, and it's only just still coming back for all of the spectacular numbers, and Greta Gerwig having the highest opening of a woman-directed film ever. And Barbenheimer was huge, but the strike deadline was extended to help make that huge by ensuring those film stars could be on their pink and black carpets.
And fulfill contractual duties. I think that's an area maybe that our audience isn't familiar with, but you... actors and directors in particular are contractually obligated to promote the work that they did. Not for every film, but if it's in their contract, it's in their contract. So each extension date was tied to a mass promotional event. And there are a number, I guess, full disclosure here, there are a number of press junkets that we recorded prior to the SAG strike that will be held to promote the film later, despite the strike, because those on strike still do want their work to be seen by our audience. Beyond acting, so many actors are now producers as well. You bring up Greta Gerwig having the biggest ever opening by a woman director. Well, that's because Margot Robbie wanted to hire her specifically for that gig. It was Margot and her husband, Tom Ackerley, Lucky Chap Productions, who brought Greta into the deal with Mattel. So Margot is not only there to like promote her acting performance, but this massive production that she was involved with from beginning to end.
Yeah, so our focus really is on supporting creative workers and their art while also making sure that there is a healthy and engaged audience for movies. Because in order for creative work to be fairly compensated, there needs to be income from theater tickets and streaming subscriptions and our eyeballs on television advertisements. So at this point in time, neither SAG-AFTRA nor the WGA are calling for boycotts on streaming services or going to the cinema. So keep doing that, because films need audiences. People only make wages when there is money to pay them. And keep reading and listening and learning about the reasons for this strike.
Yeah. Stay informed. Knowledge is power. I guess we also should talk a little about what this means on a practical level for things that we do that, you know, that we love doing and that people love watching, like, for example, our Four Faves video series. Where are we at with that, Brian?
As teased, a few were recorded before the strike. We can put those out, but with with actors, we're still able to talk to directors. That's because the Directors Guild of America did make a deal after the WGA strike, but before the SAG strike, SAG after strike. So that's why at film festivals and various letterbox things, you might see directors doing promotional work, which they are allowed to do and often contractually obligated to do. And so even if the director is a writer director, if they're speaking about the film that they directed, that is something that they could do.
A good example of that just ahead of us in this podcast feed is George Miller, Mad Max maestro, speaking with the directors of Talk To Me, the new A24 Ahi horror film, Michael and Danny Filippo. They're all directors, they're all speaking about directing, they're also all writers, but they're not speaking about writing. So yeah, it's weird. We can still talk to people. We just got to be really careful, right, Mia?
Yes, because writers and actors have strike rules that they do have to follow. So while we loved talking to the WGA strikers on the picket lines about their four faves a few months ago, it is a bit trickier with SAG-AFTRA members, as they are not supposed to talk to press about struck work. Any struck work, not just work they are involved in. Because, after all, actors are not just paid to act, but to participate in promotion. So, while this strike is on, we will not be asking actors for their four faves, but we will be able to ask the many, many other crew members who help make movies, such as costume and production designers, editors, cinematographers, composers, etc.
Crew, step up. This is your moment to shine. I guess, There is one thing. I've mentioned that this is Hollywood-centric. There are other film industries in other countries that are not, you know, operating under these contracts, these making struck work. So therefore, there are potentially actors and writers involved in low-budget indies or, for example, films that have received waivers from the union to keep shooting because they've pre-agreed to all of the conditions that the actors and the writers want in their new contract. And yet, even the actors and writers in those shows and films will probably still refrain from talking in solidarity with their partners because intersectionality is what it's all about when it comes to, gunning for fair compensation and protection. In conclusion, Your Honour, there is a lot to talk about, a lot of change coming, huge implications. It's going to be a very strange festival and awards season. And we know you've got lots of questions, and so have we, and we are here for all of them. We're literally learning something new every day. 5 minutes after we press stop on this record, we will have learned something else. We don't even have all the answers. Everything is constantly shifting. This is a living, breathing approach to how Letterboxd is operating in this strike environment. And, you know, we're here for you.
So I guess that means Best in Show team, we're back in business.
Woo! We can give awards to each other, right?
Wait, are you trying to keep me and I from unionizing, Gemma?
Yeah, Gemma, we're wise to your tricks.
I mean, I've got socialized medicine, so I don't give a shit. It's fine.
That's the real award.
The real award is you can break a leg and not have to pay for it.
The dream.
That's what life's all about. What does that mean? That means that we'll be writing columns looking at Mia for that. We'll be jumping into the pod studio looking at Gemma at that. And we're looking at you. Send us your questions about the strike. We're going to get answers for you. We're going to learn alongside you. Send us questions about Barbenheimer if you want. The award chances. This is Best in Show. It won't all be strike talk, but it's all connected. Because again, don't forget, that's why the Oscars exist in the first place.
Hey, look, we should start an award now for the best picket sign. So, you know, by all means, send photos in with your emails as well of the best picket sign you've seen.
And in the meantime, there are several ways to help, from joining the picket lines to donating to emergency assistance programs to posting about the strike and talking to friends and family about why it's so, so, so important. We have how to help links in the episode notes. Finally, you can support your favorite writers and actors by watching and celebrate the movies and TV they make and by talking about the value of creative work. We've also got a Best in Show list in the notes of great films to watch to get a handle on the history of unionized labor. knowledge is power. Or as Indiana Jones says, knowledge is treasure.
Aww.
Look at that.
I love that you got a little Indy in there.
We got to get him in there.
Also, tell us your favorite film about unions and activism. Is it Norma Rae? Is it Erin Brockovich? I don't know. Is it Pride? Is it
Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris?
Lest we forget. Yeah. Send us in your fave. Tell us why you love a particular film that calls attention to workers' rights. Is it Kirsten Dunst eating cake? I know that's Brian's favorite, probably.
Marie Antoinette. that is about losing her head. No, Kirsten Dunst does not eat cake in the great movie Strike.
Exclamation point.
There is a lot of ravioli eating, so that's.
I cannot highly recommend enough Pride, the British movie about queer activists joining with Welsh miners in a protest. Mia, it has the hot priest in it. He does beautiful dancing.
What?
He does beautiful dancing with the cop from The Wire. It's one of the most erotic moments in unionized labor history of filmmaking, and you got to watch it.
Oh my God. That movie has been in my watch list for years, but it has just jumped to the top now.
Do you mean McNulty? There's so many cops.
I mean McNulty.
Yeah, okay.
It's McNulty and Moriarty in a beautiful relationship. And like, if that's the only reason you watch Pride because you're somehow deeply uninterested in organized strikes, then just watch it for McNulty and Moriarty getting it on the dance floor.
Thanks for listening to this Best in Show minisode, a limited awards season series brought to you by The Letterboxd Show. We will be back in 2 weeks with a strike captain for a mailbag episode of Best in Show. So send your questions in to podcast@letterboxd.com.
You can follow all of us and our HQ page on Letterboxd using the links in our episode notes. Thanks to our crew, Slim for making us sound amazing, and production coordinator Sophie Shin for being amazing. Thanks to Letterboxd member Trent Walton for the music, and to you for listening.
Best in Show is a tape deck production. It's going to take you and the police department and the fire department and the National Guard to get me out of here.
This is a Tape Deck Podcast.